Good morning, and this is an autobiographical snapshot, Boo, recorded in my car as I drive from Douglas in Cork in Ireland to Glenmire to meet my good friend Roger Overall for a short cup of coffee. It's a Thursday morning, and the inspiration for this autobiographical Boo began in the thought, how amazing it would be if I had a sound of my grandfather, or indeed my father, a day in his life in, oh, let us say 1914 or 1886, you know, a single day in a year of somebody from a previous generation. Now, I'm very sure that if I asked any of you who are listening to this, would you be interested in hearing the voice of your grandmother, grandfather, mother, father, somebody from the past, talking to you about a single day that they had and describing it, you would say immediately, without hesitation, yes, please. So that's why I'm recording this, so that my daughter, when the day comes, that she says to herself, you know, wouldn't it be great to hear my father, or go a further generation on, my father's father, or just to be balanced about it, my son's children, either of my two sons' children. So this is recorded for that reason, to preserve an audio record of a single piece of time. And I'm going to use yesterday as an example because it was a particularly important day in my life, and how important a day it is in my life remains to be seen. But my gut feel, my intuition, my primitive brain tells me that it was highly significant and perhaps will be a turning point. So here goes. The day, you know, began with me at home, getting up, not shaving, not dressing, walking around in a dressing gown, doing a little bit, I think, of social media stuff, and particularly then getting breakfast for our daughter. So I did fatherly duties in the kitchen, you could say, and then the others disappeared and I was left in the house alone. And I did some things which I can't remember right now in the kitchen, but I was preparing myself psychologically. The most important thing I was doing at the start of the day was preparing myself psychologically to go into a mental hospital. Okay, that sounds terribly dramatic, and I suppose I've just been practicing drama skills by saying it that way. But the truth is that yesterday was the very first day in my life that I went into a mental health ward in a hospital, in any country, in any capacity. Okay, there are a lot of stories that are going to grow out of this one, but if I just leave undeveloped at present the story of my relationship with mental hospitals and how I've managed to wait until yesterday to actually go into one. But in a nutshell, yesterday I drove over then from home in Glenmire, parked in the parking lot at Wilton Shopping Centre, and scurried along a little bit late to catch up to meet with two people I know from AWARE, the mental health organisation in Ireland. This mental health organisation is another story in its own right. You'll find it if you Google it, AWARE Ireland. But I was meeting with two other people, and I was going to be an observer at a group which was going to meet between 11 o'clock and 12 o'clock in a hospital in Cork. And so we went into the hospital, and there's another series of audios about my first impressions of the hospital and what happened, and I can do this without breaking any confidentiality. So if I say to you that I then sat for an hour as a participant observer in a self-help group in a Cork mental hospital, and I was at the time, the reason I was there was twofold. One was to help me to overcome the reason that I was avoiding going into a mental hospital, even to visit a good friend who might be there. And that's an obscure way of saying, look, I've had good friends who have gone into mental hospitals and I've never visited them, and I'm not proud of it, and I want to overcome this within myself. And so on the other side, there's also the possibility I was considering of becoming a facilitator in a self-help group in a mental hospital. So I was observing what was going on, taking it in, noticing how it would affect me, and noticing how it affected other people. So there, that's we came out of there then and went and had a cup of coffee. In fact, to be exact, didn't have a cup of coffee, had a sausage roll in some kind of pastry thing with a cup of tea. So the three of us sat in Wilton Shopping Centre and we debriefed the meeting that had happened. And on that, during that conversation, the truth is I revealed to them the extent to which I have experienced training facilitators. The years that I have trained trainers and trained facilitators. And that's another story or stories. But I did my best to be helpful to the others and the three of us who had been the facilitators. And it was kind of an unusual conversation because we hadn't agreed beforehand what I would do there, if anything, for them afterwards. And we certainly hadn't agreed beforehand that I would give them some feedback on my feelings, my thoughts, my impressions, and my, anything that I had while I was there. But I did, and they asked for it, and I did my best. And that opens up a whole chapter of another arena to do with the developing skills of facilitators in Ware in Ireland, particularly in Cork, actually, and particularly informally. And I include my own skills as a facilitator because my perspective in relation to facilitating mental health groups is that I am a novice. However many groups I've facilitated in the world of business, in the world of mental health, I'm a novice, and to be truthful, I want to stay a novice. That's another boo. Anyway, out that comes, and the weather is pretty good. It's dry. It's not raining that I remember. And I go back over to the car with one of the people, and got a huge and very unpleasant shock. The car is clamped. So the next thing that happens is that approximately the next 3/4 of an hour is spent on the issue of being clamped. And that's a subject for another audio in its own right. After being clamped and getting released from being clamped, I'm left with all sorts of issues, including, you know, do I set out down the road of taking the clamping company to court to get my money back, the 100 euros, which, trust me, I was unfairly ripped off. But anyway, that's another boo. So basically, I then drove from there, got to collect my daughter from school a little bit later than planned. And that's the subject of another boo. And we went home, and we got home, and a bit of food for her. And then I took her to a swimming class. We did swimming class, came out of swimming class, went back to the house, did school homework, did feeding, did putting her to, well, letting her watch a bit of TV, did a bit of cleaning up the kitchen, did putting her to bed and reading her a story about, I don't know, the book was, all I remember right now is that the book was pink, that it was very well written. It wasn't a Horrid Henry story, but it was another children's storybook that was very well written. Great short sentences, really nice mixture of language. Anyway, that's another story. But and all of this was leading up to something very big that was to happen at the end of the day. I then rang, I had already rung Roger overall, because coming back in the car, my daughter said to me, Dad, why don't you get a babysitter and go out? And this is the first time this has ever happened. I did try to get a babysitter to go out. It proved impossible. I tried Owen O'Leary. He wasn't available to come out, even if I did have a babysitter. And I mentioned him just because that's another story. And eventually Roger Overall and I met with our dogs, and at about 25 past nine last night, we left my house and we went for a walk in the estate. And I'm back under the river at this point. And I've got 9 minutes remaining on this audio, and I don't intend to fill it all, but I don't want to leave the day left unsaid. So on the day goes, we have a very good conversation, Roger and I. On his choice, it was about something that was going on in my life. And I talked to him about a number of things, including what I'm going to tell you about in a second. I spoke to him about Chris Brogan. I spoke to him about Dan McLaughlin, the Dan Plan. Wonderful, wonderful guy on in the Gulf area. I also spoke to him about China, which hovers in the background of my existence as the big idea. And that's another audio. And I'm gradually leading up to the fact that we left the house at 25 past nine, and at 3 minutes past ten, I was on a Skype call with Vancouver with Jane Boyd. Now, in a nutshell, Jane Boyd and I met on Twitter. We got some contact on Twitter via a thing called 12 in 12, which I have booed about before. And it's led by Jacqueline Carley, who I think calls herself Jack. In fact, I think other people call her Jack too. But anyway, and that's another story. Fitterella, who she is on Twitter, brought Jane Boyd and I together through an activity in which I've spoken about before, in which you do develop one new habit for a month throughout the year. And you can take it or leave it after the month. And that's where my early morning breakfasting and my this month going to be in bed by 11:30 at night comes in. So here I was with a 1 hour slot between 10 o'clock and 11 o'clock in my mind to talk to Jane Boyd. And I did that, and that's a subject for another boo altogether. And just an amazing little thing happened during that. Lots of amazing things happened. It was in the conversation with Jane Boyd. As soon as I think of one, I think, oh my God, I should mention that. I'd have to do a comprehensive boo at some stage. Or a comprehensive audio. But anyway, the point is that a woman from Cork, Ali Davis, went to Vancouver recently and met Jane Boyd. Now, I've had contact with Ali Davies, D-A-V-I-E-S, on Twitter. We both live in Cork. We never actually met face-to-face. And here she is meeting somebody who I'm talking to on Skype in Vancouver. Anyway, that's such a rich seam to be mined that it can wait. Now, that got me to about 11:05 at night. And at 11:05 at night, I was in no fit state for sleep. I can be honest, I was excited. My head was spinning. It was the conversation which I'd had. It was so rich, and you know how a good conversation really leaves you. Well, a good conversation could also leave you really, really calm and quiet and thoughtful and pensive. But I was on the other extreme, which was, oh my goodness, the potential. Little acorns growing to big trees and all that sort of stuff. I wasn't in any fit state for sleep, but I did actually just about get to the bedroom at 11:30 in time. I must have done something between 11:10 and 11:29. It certainly included finding the dog, fishing him out from a nice warm pillow he'd settled himself on in one room, and tying him up for the night. God, that sounds awful, but anyway, trust me, I'm not an awful dog owner. Tie him up for the night and eventually into bed. And thankfully, even though I was really, really unquiet, if you could say that, going into the bed, I fell and I slept a sleep of the stone. Yep, I slept, and that, God, that might even come from Rilke, for all I know. But anyway, the sleep of the stone, if it doesn't come from Rilke, and if it doesn't belong to anybody else, it's going to be the title of a poem in which I draw inspiration from the day that I've just spoken about. What did I call it? The sleep of the stone. Yeah, in other words, I just conked out. And I conked out until I woke this morning, well before 6 o'clock, 5:20, having had, a decent amount of sleep. Maybe I'd like to have had more, but that's it. So that was a day, a single day, Wednesday. I've kind of forgotten what date it is now. And I'm now got to Glenmire, and, thank you, Mark Rock. I must draw up my heroes list, you know. The trouble is, if you draw up a list of heroes, you put somebody at number one. How does somebody feel if they're number four? So I want a list of 100 heroes in my life, but I don't want them to have numbers opposite them, because... And Mark Rock, you're on that list. My God, you're on that list. And thank you. Bye-bye.